Hello, welcome to a Mentionable Podcast. I was just telling Shivam about my time in New York, and I had to fly Porter on the way there.
Oh.
And the woman, by the way, I don't know if we have time this week because we're really tight for time. We're going to do this on the Patreon, actually. You really, really do.
We already did it last week, though. They should go listen to the whole story.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Okay. So, well, we're in a time warp now. Well, clearly, we're pre-recording. Well, way to give it away, Shivam. If you're watching this on Spotify or whatever, you'll see I'm wearing the same clothes. It gives it away. Just, I need a week off from psychotic breaks that I have on this show. But we're going to call my airline because it is 48 days since they lost my luggage. You do remember that Irene, you might be listening now, by the way, because I sent an email. Irene, I sent one to you today. And you know who I copied on that email? Because I'm not fucking around anymore. The CEO and the vice president and your head of media relations. If any of you are listening, I will be your greatest nightmare. You are, I can't even believe that there's an organization that is run like this. I truly understand, like, I feel bad for your customer service reps because you drive them insane. You drive your customers insane, and then they have to call your customer service reps, and I try never to be that person on the phone that gets on there and takes it on the person on the phone. I start every call, I'm nice, whatever. But now you can see why I'm not going to be nice, because I'm losing my fucking mind. It is 48 days since you lost my luggage. You told me at the 45-day mark that it's considered loss and you have to pay me $1,900. I don't have that money. I also submitted to you all my receipts for everything. You owe me another $1,000. I don't have that money either. So I sent an email to all of them today, and I think it's about time to get the Jews involved. And it's probably going to cost me a lot of money, but at this point, I just need to prove this point that I'm getting petty now. Because I don't have my bag. It is almost 2 months. And I don't have any compensation for the things in my bag. And you know what she said to me last week? This is why I go crazy.
You talked to her last week because I was
She emailed me last week and I said, Irene, it's 45 days. As per your own policy on your website, you owe me $1,900. I want my stuff back. Don't get me wrong. It's my favorite clothes and stuff like that. But I have been emailing and calling with these people for a month now that I'm exhausted. Just give me a fucking check for $1,900 and I'll go buy new shit. I don't want to even hear your name again. So I sent her that and I was like, it's 45 days. Like, you owe me the $1,900. Just send the money. I don't want to talk to you anymore. And she writes back and goes, Mr. Power.
Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Jordan. She said Mr. Jordan. She said that your bag is on the way back to Canada. It's on the next flight back to Canada.
Oh, another next flight.
Yeah, of course. I'll let you know when it's delivered to your place.
Yeah, never.
Of course, I get back from New York. Another week's gone by. I'm like, oh, really? How many flights were there to Canada during that time? And I wrote back today, and I was like, that's when I wrote that email. I was like, you've lied to me. You've had my bag for 2 months. You owe me $2,900. Like, this is why people go crazy. So we'll see what happens. And of course, we will be calling them on the Patreon. That is the point. That was the point of all that. Patreon.com/unmentionablepodcast. And there will be a woman on the phone, innocent customer service rep, that's going to have to deal with me at this point. And I will make it comical. I won't yell at her. I will make it funny like the other ones. So that's what's coming up. Join the Patreon. Patreon.com/unmentionablepodcast. I believe that's last week. So whatever, whatever.
Guys, go watch it.
Okay, so this is part two with Matthew Haley, the shaman that we had on the show. We explored a lot of things, and actually at one point, Shivam just asked him for all the ins and outs about DMT. It was very interesting.
It's in this episode.
It's in this episode. Yeah. So we hope you enjoyed last week, and if you have a couple seconds, go on iTunes and give the show 5 stars. If you listen on Spotify as well, please hit 5 stars. Thank you so much, and follow Matthew on Instagram. Come on.
So fast forward, I am now, and this is, it takes a lot to climb out. I work a part-time job at a tanning salon. I am now part-time serving on weekends, and I do Uber. I'm literally working roughly about 60 hours a week to climb myself out of a hole. I'm staying with a friend. I did end up homeless at one point.
Where were you homeless?
Just floating around Toronto, couch surfing, tried to end up starting a new life and scraped just enough to go to Mexico and try to start a new life with something online. That didn't work. Had to come back.
Were you ever on the streets?
Technically, yes.
What was that like?
I never actually stayed on the street. I've always found something for myself. For a period, I was actually staying out of the back of the abandoned spot of my business. where I work. And so, I mean, that's on the streets when it's just, yeah, I had a roof and technically a toilet, nothing else for a while. I had a gym membership so I could get showers. Like, I was going through the ringer. Meanwhile, I've got multiple jobs.
Sure.
Now, yeah, I didn't do so great with my credit even before all of this. There are certain blocks. Through the beginning of all this stuff, I was like, screw insurance. It's a scam anyways. And then got caught and drove on it. And like, so I've got my license in the way.
It's expensive to be poor. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. It's like your bank goes into overdraft, then you owe more money. And then it's like, it just keeps piling up.
And then you have all these payday loan places that make it so easy to just separate with more and more of your money. And then let's talk about the inability to save money by having a kitchen. You know, all better food eating. Now I'm forced to seek these things out. Now I'm a vegan. So that makes it even more complicated. And thankfully I'm now predominantly raw vegan. So I just grab a salad or some fruit. It's not a big deal for me, but you have most of these people just eating this processed junk all the time, spending more money to do it, so on and so forth. And it's like, well, why? Because once you get down enough, it costs three times the amount to get out as someone actually living at a higher line. It actually costs more at those points in time. So
it's like digging yourself out of a hole. But so did people in your life, because this tends to happen, it's kind of like a cascade effect. When people see you doing badly, they see it reflected in you what they don't want to be. Like, oh, Matthew's like, you know, he's almost homeless. Did people turn away from you that you thought would stick around?
I've lost a lot of people. And
how did they explain it?
Going into this case study, I made a decision that I was going to do it and live it. So I'm not overcoming anxiety. These things, it took me a while to go back to work out of a choice to understand it. This is the hardest thing I've ever done, was not do better for myself. And, or at least get by. Then I'll touch base on that.
Why do you call it a case study?
So I decided to understand why people live this and to live the psychology of being under poverty, why people aren't doing better for themselves when people can just go get jobs, so on and so forth. Why are people choosing to do and live this way? And that's where the choice to not work in long term and not take like a short break from the system, and automotive's a high turnover as it stands, and just say, you know what, no, this, like, we're human beings. We should be able to just kind of put in a little bit and have some food and a place to live. Like, this is wrong. And going through all of that, it got deeper, and part of it's intertwined with a lot of personal shadow work I've been doing in the past week, which is admitting where I gave up. And so if you've given up at any point in time in life, this type of stuff and this way of life is alluring because of the way that not just the people on it will distract themselves and lie to themselves about how great of a life it is, but also the way that society scoffs. Oh my God, that must be so nice. Oh, you're just lazy all day. But it's the worst life you could imagine, and scraping and wondering where your food's coming from, and sometimes being scared to eat the food in your cupboards because you don't know where you're going to get more from. And going through these actual psychological understandings, going through I didn't know what I was biting off. I pushing away family, and now it's like, yeah, I have to be. I can't get support anywhere, and I shouldn't be. I've worn people out. Like this is understanding and shadow work and acceptance, right? Like, yeah, no, people have been worn out, and I can't wait to get my businesses going so I can literally go back and say thank you to everyone who's been along this way. Do most of them believe that's never going to come? 100%.
Sure.
Because at the end, coming out of all of this, I've got multiple jobs. I'm homeless. I'm this. My worker, I talked to her and she goes,
a worker?
Worker is the OW, the Ontario Works.
Oh,
the,
okay, yeah. The, like a case manager.
Case manager. Okay. Says to me, I'm really, really sorry. I got some bad news for you. I'm like, when? A couple weeks ago. For now, multiple months in a row, you've been reporting high income. Okay. I was
decent. What do they define as high income?
Basically anything over, I think, $1,500-$1,800.
Okay.
It's not a high income. A high income
no.
is $20,000 a month.
Yeah. How much are they giving you?
$700 a month they give.
And then so when you hit the 1800, they go, this is a problem?
So they start, what they do is as you're reporting your income, they start doing a clawback. At a certain point, like it's, I think it's 50% of every dollar that you make, then they start bringing back, which it should. You're not getting this money indefinitely. But as that comes through, then there's a certain point where you're making enough and you don't need the support. Good. Like, this is a good thing. But then she comes to me and is like, okay, unfortunately, like for another month, like I can't give you anything. I'm like, oh, like and worse, like
because you've clawed it all back.
No, because I make enough money every month.
Oh, okay.
I'm not that. And see, this is the thing. I say because I make enough money every month. When you talk to your worker, they say you made too much. This is what I'm talking about, the subversion psychology that is taught and perpetuated within this. When you turn around and you tell someone that they made too much, the first inclination is to stop making so much money in the world because now I'm not getting this free money.
No, but you know it's not enough to live on, so wouldn't you be incentivized to just make more?
Well, and that's the thing is there's a way to scrape and survive in this world and get a few people together and literally toe a line and do a little bit of cash side work and so on to just make a bare minimum because people are just trying to survive. Remember I said about giving up?
Yeah.
So we have to break that mentality and show people what more they can have. First off, that it isn't that difficult, that it's actually easier than this other life that they've been living. But more so, we also have to break the psychology that is literally inside the system that's supposed to be helping that says you made too much money. Let's just look at that. Really deeply look at what that does to someone who's in those places.
Well, there's a finite supply of money, though. So eventually, at some point, they have to cut it off.
Well, but this is the thing, is that should be encouraged and perpetuated, not talked about as you made too much, so I can't give you any. Should be, oh my God, you're doing so well.
Yeah, I know, but it's just semantics. At the end of the day, it's the same reality.
This is programming.
Well, I don't believe that, but
this is the psychological.
I think she looks at her budget and goes like,
I had my worker absolutely flabbergasted, and I'm actually next week supposed to be dropping off a letter to her to take to her management because she literally says, I'm so right. She had a moment over this. She started apologizing to me a little teary because I'm not wrong, apparently, that this is actually perpetuated because what she said is, I have to close your account. I'm so sorry. This should be congratulations. You're doing better in
life.
Oh,
I get what you're saying.
This, they, at the moment to build someone up, they tear them down.
Yeah, I'm not as easily like affected by words that I just be like, it is what it is and move on. But you seem to be very analytical.
And this is the thing is, these are people who are in all kinds of cognitive dissonance. Words are literally what got them there. Words are what affects them, because at Mass now we have a complete lacking of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Look at a lot of movements coming up. Like I'm a rose by any other name. I'd be just as sweet by I'm a two spirit by Indigenous, but I will never ever call myself a they. I'm not a multiple personality. And this is where
sounds like this show.
Well, because the reality is, this self-focus is now I'm putting everything externally. The whole concept of they actually puts everything outside of myself, puts all my happiness outside of myself, now does away with sticks and stones may break my bones, but words would never hurt me, and also is hyper-categorizing oneself into just yet another box of
I've
of
made
society.
That point in the show. It's a new binary that they create. Yeah, but it's lucrative.
Very lucrative. That's why I say, you know, if I have to identify, I'm a rose by any other title, I'd just be as an awesome of a human being. To my point that I don't care what you call me. Yes, I'm physically a man. I am a two-spirit deeply inside. You want to get into my balances of masculine and feminine, which is just yin-yang or strong-soft? It's just multiple interpretations and metaphors. But that's where these words and understandings of them really need to come together. And again, let me put you through it. Worker calls you. I have bad news. You're making too much money.
Yeah, I get that point. I just don't think it's that big of a deal. But maybe it's because I haven't been in the situation, but it's also because I don't emotionally, I'm not as emotional of a person about stuff like that. I would just think that, like, it wasn't, I'd go, well, that wasn't probably the best way to phrase it. But I wouldn't be, because I think it's just like, I don't expect a lot out of people. Like, and I think it's her situation. She probably was trained in some sort of like management thing. Just say this.
Yeah. Well, so they're trying to push you away from their like budget. No.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's they're like, trying to get you like, off the tit. Yeah.
Well, and this is where like I can completely appreciate that. Like it's just the words. Remember, I'm coming into this with an intent to hyperanalyze
it.
So that's also where
you're more present in what's going on around you. I'm more neurotic, let's say. Manic once and sometimes. But I know what you're saying. Okay, I just want to move on to something else. So well, actually, I want to close this loop here. What is it like? Because we tried to get, I wouldn't say you were like, you're currently living on the streets. We wanted to get a guy who was currently living on the streets. We almost did. But I think I just want to explain to people, and this will make them more empathetic. Like when I was asking you about like people in your life mm-hmm. treating you differently when you're down and out, because like a lot of people have this like fear that they're going to become that. So they don't want to get close to that. It's in the same way that they chase celebrities in Hollywood and like people whose status is going up in society. They want to be around that energy. What is it like then forging new friendships and dating, being in that sort of those circumstances?
For me, not as stressful. Because I have the intent and the purpose behind it. But that said, I lost people along the way.
Do they say to you?
They don't say much. They just disappear. They just disappear when, you know, I've got too many complaints. I'm having too much trouble because of these stresses, so on and so forth. Really putting it out there and bleeding the heart to the world, not just of poverty, but a mental health. You know, I let it go for a couple of years and it got out of control. It becomes habitual. So once you lose yourself, it becomes this habitual thing of now we got to climb back and psychological programming. And that's where at the end, like when you're at the end, it's just you start doing better for yourself, cut you off, goodbye. Instead of if I'm in this position still needing more money, that's something I'm doing wrong now.
So what do you say to people who go, just go make more money?
Well, it's difficult.
Sure.
And I'm working on it. And that's simply that is, now before it was, I can't, anxiety, depression, so on and so forth. At a certain point, I dropped that and I'm like, no, I'm going to go. Took months to find work. We're talking, because of childhood PTSD, I cannot wear a mask on a very physical medical exemption. I start having a fit in about a minute and a half just because it takes me back to being held down as a child. But try finding work amongst all of this stuff. Like it became exponentially more difficult. Finally found a salon and place that was going to, you know, give me some work in the meantime. Finally got up to, you know, yeah, now I can afford a bike and get these things. And now I can get my Uber going. And it takes time.
Sure.
It takes massive amounts of time. And then if you still want to have a resemblance of a life and a social life, then it's going to take even more time. It's hard dating when you don't have a place to bring someone to and the dating life starts stressing on them. And it's always their place if you're going to spend some time somewhere. Like, it is extremely impactful and stressful on one's life in every single aspect, to which the point now where you're only going to hang out with people generally that are in that same lifestyle.
Sure.
And now you're feeding off each other. And this
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
There's, like I said, there's a certain line once you're under it. It's weird. It's not normal society. It's this whole, I can get what I can get. It's that same, you know, I'm going to make the business and that I'm going to take the 80%, this entitlement, but from this different way of the world owes me something. And then that's where you see crime come into play. A lot of crime would be gone if there's just more availability and more money on the bottom line. We would actually see crime go out the wayside because it's not needed the same way. There is somewhat of an aspect of need when you're low enough because you can't see there's another way.
Of course, I understand that point. I think some of it is also, I want to steal Nikes. There's a little bit of that too. And it's hard to decipher what's that, because I remember AOC said that people were stealing in New York during the riots because they were poor and needed bread for their families. Sure.
Yeah.
There were also people stealing Nikes and Panini presses. Well, so that's a problem when you excuse some of it.
And it's interesting. I've seen some of, like, I mean, I studied poverty and hung out with some of these circles. And it's like, There's
it's a whole underground world. It's what you said.
There's this need for consumerism, this need to feel like I'm not in the life that I am.
Right.
So then I will buy all these things and I feel fancy and I feel like I'm rich, even though, you know, 80% of the city is financed and paycheck to paycheck. I mean,
it's like, probably. Yeah. Yeah.
You are one of the richest people in this city. You are in the top 20. I'd put you in the top 20% if you have no debt and $5 in your pocket. You have more money than most of the people on Forest Hill. That's a reality. That's real.
Wow. Potentially. Well, there was like that Trump thing when he said that when he went bankrupt, that he walked by a homeless guy and the guy had a higher net worth than him.
Exactly.
It's very fascinating.
And that's like, where do we really put the worth? And like net worth is, you want to get into the big sandbox? It's net worth. It's your net worth. Amex no limit cards won't look at you if you don't have net worth.
What's their risk? It's a risk tolerance.
Exactly.
It makes sense. It's all
net
it's
worth
all actuaries.
Is the best person to risk against because look at them. They're not even in. And if you have credit and utilization ratios and so on and so forth. So, like, I mean, that's where it's perceptionary. And that's one of my main things I do within shamanism is conscious perspective work to actually change the perspective, to not put out these excuses, to not look at that. Well, I don't understand it. Or no, let's take a look at it. Let's understand it. And when we come around with that conscious perspective, there is very little differences between poverty, between middle class, between the rich. The only one difference is consumerism and investor mentalities. And the reality is you're just at different levels for this consumerism and you didn't get bit. You didn't get a hit that would someone else, like a company tanking or this, like all kinds of reasons people just can go from, you know, upper class to living on the streets.
Yeah, I think that's pretty rare because you can insulate yourself to a degree, but I understand
it
what you're saying.
Over 10
well,
years
it's, they
on
say
average.
It's usually one of the biggest drivers of suicide is people that were higher status and then had to drop all the way down. They
yes.
end up killing themselves.
And that's because their happiness was perpetuated and outside of them. It wasn't these additional experiences. These things are what made a person that make the persona.
Are
and
you describing me right now? I'm like, have you ever flown business class to Bangkok? It's amazing, though. I understand what you're saying.
I took the Collectivo to see a shaman in Mexico. That was really neat.
Like, there you go.
Back, random bus. I had no idea where I was going. I got let off at the side of the road. It was great.
We're all capitalist whores to a degree.
And that's
it's just what it is.
I've been eating that away within myself because part of that consumerism mentality is what will keep someone on the bottom. Because I need to consume, I need to do this.
And keep someone on the top, too. All of us, basically.
Well, it'll prevent you from ever making it to the top. Because if you are consuming, you are not investing. And if you are not investing, you are not creating for your future. You are just consuming. You are living. You are working to live and living to work. You're not even breaking the paradigm.
Well, it's also, you like, money's a tool, right? So if you spend $500 on Nikes when you can put it on your website for your new business.
Exactly.
So you want to strike that balance. But I think a lot of people, like Jay-Z said this about the people he grew up with, is that like you're just like, oh, get black people out of poverty. And he's like, yeah, but it's also like a value system.
Boom.
Like you need to teach them how to use money to get themselves out of a hole instead of buying, you know, five pairs of Nikes.
I love how you said that. And just to kind of touch and to seal off that conversation about poverty is that was the biggest thing I said to the workers. I'm like, where's my like support and teach me how to budget crew now and how to live and so on. Like,
they'll say go on YouTube.
Where's that? Exactly.
But so this is the part where I differ from you because like I, you know, have created a life for myself. I have two businesses and stuff like that. And I think people say personal responsibility to a degree. I understand a lot of the stuff you're saying that it's like when you're in a hole and you don't have social networking, you don't have a lot of social mobility, 100% makes sense that you get stuck in that cycle. That being said, and maybe this is more of like a middle class perspective, is that like I have been around a lot of people. I've been on this earth for 36 years and they will say to me, like they're starting a business and they will call me and they'll say, I'm doing a legal document or I'm doing an invoice. How do I do an invoice? And I go, it's all on the internet. Go on YouTube. And they go, well, they get all flustered and they're like, well, no one taught me. And it's like, who taught me? And the thing is when I was 24, I was very poor. Like I didn't have money. I was actually an unpaid intern, but I spent those hours teaching myself thousands of hours that other people made other choices, teaching myself about accounting, legal, websites, SEO. I taught myself four careers that I find it difficult to identify with that aspect because I think it's just really grit that is missing in a person.
I want to take a stab at that.
Okay.
You're where you are because you worked for it.
And luck.
There you go. Okay. That's what I'm looking for a little bit. And luck. Not one single person helped you get where you are. Is that an accurate statement?
Honestly.
With some advice.
Mine's pretty... honestly, not really. Maybe one.
Okay. One. And some luck. That could be the difference. And...
I don't think so. I think it's 10,000 hours alone at the coffee shop.
Taking that time for yourself, somewhere along the way, you got a lesson. Somewhere along the way, you got a lesson to be self-determined, to not hold back, to push past your anxiety. You also have a gift. You have a gift, and you know you have a gift to push through things faster and better than most.
I thought you were talking about my ass. I was like... Oh, thank you. You noticed. I was like, that's CrossFit.
That's very nice. You're sitting down.
That's very nice of you to say. But I understand what you're saying. I just think some things are a little simpler than you make them out to be. Meaning you can decide how to use your finite amount of hours to... Basically, I consider like getting to... It's like you said, I'm getting back on my feet. So it's like step one, step two, step three.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say your 10th step is like a condo or like something. I feel like for me, it was just like I had to lay out like 20 steps and getting around those steps was like, what am I willing to sacrifice?
Mm-hmm.
So it was I didn't watch TV. I didn't watch movies for a while. Yep. I didn't do certain social situations mm-hmm. because I had to create a life from essentially nothing. And I see how people use their time. And that's the part where I go, it's all out there. It's all on the internet. There's millions of books. You could do it. And I don't know if it's someone else's responsibility. I think it's someone else's responsibility to get you like off the jumping point. But I do think there's something in certain people that they just,
yep,
it doesn't click. Like the person I was talking about came from similar life circumstances to me, but is calling me, screaming at me because I won't give them the skills that, and there's a narcissism in that, saying that like I had to teach her, that it's my responsibility to teach her.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part where I just, it's tough for me to get on board with a lot of that.
Well, and just to throw out a concept is, but why not teach them? Because you become better at your craft every time you teach someone.
No, they drain me of my competence.
Cool. That's why I said, why not teach them? They drain you of your competence.
No, I do teach people, but what happens is when you become skilled at something,
mm-hmm.
like running a business, then people see that, and it's Tuesday someone calls you, Thursday someone wants coffee, next Monday someone has a question for you, and I think my resentment comes from, like, I am being, and it's like kind of how we started this conversation, I'm being drained by people who won't do the work.
Got it. So this is something you come across regularly, especially the more success you're going to have, the more you're going to see this. I would say take a moment and get a steps list together that you would recommend to everyone and say, here's my help.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah.
Here's my help. This is the way I'm going to help you with. Follow these and find your way.
But isn't it just Google?
True. But what you're doing is you're inspiring them.
But haven't I already inspired them? That's why they came to me.
You're inspiring where to go, what steps to do. You're just adding to that. And this is something that you could take out of a good place, out of love, not out of frustration, but just say, you know what? I do want to help people because helping people feels good. But I don't want to waste my time and become drained on this. I want to find the middle ground.
And help people who are already helping themselves. But I think that's the part that is frustrating is that aspect.
And that's where... My biggest thing is I'm not wrong. I'm not going to sit here and pussyfoot. Like, the bottom line has to. If you're listening to this and you're in poverty on the system, cut the shit. Cut the shit and do better for yourself. There has to be some sort of self-accountability. I will say that 100%. But when someone's doing all that self-accountability and doing all of that, the system still turns around and goes, you should have. And that's where we do know, because we talk about this government system that's set up. It's very readily in front of us that capitalism is set up not to be simple, not to actually get people up, but to build upon the others. And once they're in that structure, they want to be kept in that structure.
Well, no, because like capitalism fuels the medications and the innovation that you take and I take. It's not all bad. I mean, the system of capitalism lifts so many people out of poverty. But at its core, you're right. It is exploitation of people.
It also created the need for those medications and improvements at the same time by taking us away from natural foods into processed foods and so on and so forth. Cancer is only prevalent because of the way that our society lives.
It's been around for a long time.
And it massively into the 1930s, 1940s is when it really
I definitely think we're definitely like poisoning ourselves. I just don't like when people, I guess we're all complicit in this system. It's not really like we had a choice, but we're all complicit in the system. And then we go to the ER and we take the drugs and, you know, people will say like fossil fuels are evil. And it's like, yeah, but that drug that saved your mom wouldn't got to the hospital without petrol. So I think that's my issue, is that people who, especially in first world countries like Western nations, who live on a lifestyle where they exploit people in this country and then this country, they make their iPhone and blah, blah, blah. Then having sort of a moral superiority or sort of some sort of disdain for capitalism, not to say it isn't an evil system, but it's kind of ridiculous to like look around and go like, it's killing us.
I'm all for supporting capitalism, an interlacing of capitalism, socialism, communism, an interlacing of a real say, okay, there are parts of each piece, only a few in communism that work. Okay, let me make sure that's clear. Like, capitalism's got the majority, with some pieces of socialism to interlace some bottom lines of communism, we'd actually have a system I call humanism, which is to say there's a bottom line and that still have all those elements of capitalism and to make better for yourself. That it's just about bringing up that bottom line structure. Our foundation is weak. The foundation of capitalism is falling out. So
it's also going to eat from the bottom up.
Exactly. So this is the thing, is we can only sustain this for so long, our current trajectory. Otherwise, the whole capital system is going to be gone, because there's not going to be anyone to work or do this. And it's going to be like we're starting to enter hyperinflation.
Yeah, well, I also think that I've spoken largely about in later stages of capitalism, certain institutions and agencies become compromised. Then you don't really have an FDA anymore. You just have PR for Pfizer. And that is the left's slow walk into tyranny that they don't really realize, because they have an affinity for these institutions that have been captured. And they love big tech and they love Pfizer all of a sudden. Whereas the liberals of the 90s were very counterculture, anti-security state, pro-free speech. It's really flipped that, like, you see a lot of right-wing-leaning people now have become sort of more anti-establishment. And I think it's indicative of what I'm saying, is that agency capture and a little bit of that media capture that's happening. So that's definitely part of it. But I don't know if necessarily, you know, people say, like, capitalism with, you know, I believe in capitalism with regulation. But I don't know, like, if eventually the interests of Party A wouldn't then infect the institution, you know, the government, right? So the government eventually becomes a conduit just for oligarchic class. It's not really serving its people well anymore. Even you see how Trudeau speaks to the people. It's like, you work for us. Yep. We pay your salary. Like, stop acting like it's, you know, a monarchy around here. Like, it's just, it's crazy.
And that's the biggest part about this issue that we're talking about.
I guess it is kind of a monarchy to a degree, but him as the king.
Centerfold monarchy. But basically that's also the big problem, is we need to rein in our government with the way that our taxes and our distribution. So if you weren't spending as much of your livelihood into this and the problem was getting solved, you wouldn't have an issue.
Well, it's crazy because, you know, it's like, someone would say they'd earn a lot of money, and then half goes to the government, and then 13% goes to sales tax. So let's say at the top income bracket, you're 54% in Canada. So you're getting up to like 70% of your money's gone, and it's still a system in which you are right that there's not enough for someone who's disabled to get money. Yep. So the people then at the top who would go like, and let's exclude people that are generationally wealthy, like, yep, you know, they never had to work. But a lot of people who would, like, you know, become a neurologist and make like 700 grand a year would be like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, when is it going to be enough, this system? It's like, I work, and then there that's why we lose them to the States.
And there is very little going to the foundation of our communities and our society. They're blowing and wasting money left, right, and center. And
100%.
Most of it leaves. So,
but that's the problem with communism, because you centralize the power to their friends.
And that's where I'm kind of like, I totally hear you, is no, you are already putting out enough. That's why I'm saying we need to fix the actual bottom line system and use that money that's there better and actually get you some more back, because the way they're pissing away money, they could actually take half the money they're pissing away, solve the issue. It's so roundabout the way a lot of this is going. And then, yeah, getting grocery stores on board with bruised fruit, and, you know, you can be on that registry for pickup, and we need more of those social kind of push around systems so people can, you know, go get some bruised fruit to get a break, to save some money, to then invest, to then
No, and the problem is that it's like the voting system is so fucked, because it's like I am on board with a lot of leftist principles. I believe sex work should be legalized. I should believe drugs should be legalized.
Quick note, happy sex worker day.
Happy sex worker.
Yeah.
Oh, you turned it up. I believe in those things. Life.
Good job, people. Keep going.
I believe in those things, but then also the way that the options are presented to you, it's also call me this pronoun or you're going to get fined, and I would like to regulate your speech. And yeah. I go like, well, what do you do? Like,
say we should have natural selection week. We remove all the caution signs, the regulations, everything, and see who survives by the end.
Whoa. It wouldn't be me. I can't do anything for myself. I can't even change a light bulb. If there's some sort of apocalypse, I go down first. But 100%.
That, I say that just to point is that's the kind of society we're in. That's a scary thing to think about. If we actually did something like that, it's like anyone gets to say whatever they want today. There's no legalities around any speech whatsoever. And we're going to get rid of all the caution signs. So you just have to be your wherewithal. Because when you go into, you know, other countries that don't have the infrastructure, people just got to survive. Like, they got to look in their shoe for poisonous insects. Like, there's just...
And weirdly, the government regulates their speech. Weird.
Yeah. Government regulates all the speech.
I don't... I'm pretty much a free speech absolutist. I don't really think there's a lot of incidents where I would agree with censoring someone. I mean, obviously, there are already laws in place, but... It's very strange how a lot of people are so pro-censorship nowadays, exactly. And they do not realize that it will be used against them. It's this weird affinity for the nanny state.
And, like, we can all sit there and go, I really wish this person didn't say that thing because I don't agree with it, and so on and so forth. I'm kind of like, let's take it real extreme for a second. Like, absolutely not. It's the most unethical thing we could do. But, I mean, the most effective form of birth control would be to fix every male once we're of reproductive age and really advance the technology on reconnecting our ability to reproduce to the point where it's, like, said and done. It's just cut it off.
Would you be in favor of me deciding who gets to have kids? Because I have a lot of concerns.
And see, that's where it's like now we have to be at a certain bar. You have to be at a certain income level, so on and so forth.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean, like, people who watch The Masked Singers probably shouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
If I was the prime minister, or, just like little things like that, you know?
Or I don't think it was here, but it was what Popeyes went out of chicken once, and people were like, how am I going to feed my kids? And I'm like, Popeyes is not the only place to get food. But it's.
Is that the one that was anti-gay? Oh, no, that's Chick-fil-A.
Oh, Chick-fil-A.
Remember when people were like, I will, like, this is also like why I deactivated my Twitter and I'm like really trying to stay off social media because it's just like a pissing contest. Remember when people were posting like that they were like, well, the conservatives were like posting themselves biting a chicken sandwich. to like show that they didn't think gay men should get married. I mean, it's just, this is a level of like psycho. But in the same vein, it's this person I saw the other day was posting, again, they're like 25, was posting themselves, and they said, this is what it said. It said, first shot, check. Second, like vaccines. Second shot, check. Booster, check. Second booster, check. And then it was like new bivalent. I guess that's the new one they released. That probably doesn't even do anything at this point. The fifth shot. And then they were like wearing a mask all the time. Reminder that COVID's not over. And you're like, it's kind of crazy because you're like, you're 25 years old. Like, have you not got the memo on the vax? And people are in these echo chambers, and it's like, I think what's bothering me is I don't like to go on social media anymore, and I just, my skill is social intelligence, like observing people, and I just go, ugh. I just go, it's just so transparent what people are doing, and they're all trying to get attention, and you see, like, you know, you go on TikTok, people were like, the things they'll do for attention, there's this new thing called, what the hell is the name of it? Spoonies? It's a phenomenon that just started taking place where young girls are trying to get attention on TikTok. So they're pretending that they have serious diseases and they're ending up in hospital and they're making blogs out of it. They're trying to become health influencers. And then a lot of it is finding out that it was just psychosomatic and they made it all up for attention. And so this is the stuff where I don't want to go on social media anymore. I mean,
I don't blame you.
Spoonies.
Spoonie. Look it up. Spoonies.
Well, and that's, we're in this hyper programmable society that's just going to go along with the trends. It's the mass psychosis. Like, it's, and that's why I'm now coming into shamanism. Like,
good loop around. Good job. You should have a podcast.
Thank you. But basically, when my mom was a clairvoyant, but also a massive mental health, and there's a lot of deep connections into different types of mental health and the mystics. So I was put through that whole system, put on all kinds of drugs and medication. Honestly, I gave up at 15. When I talk about deep self-reflection and the stuff I've been facing this past week, and a lot of the, like, why don't you, and I keep, you know, like, why don't they? Because they gave up. You didn't give up.
Sure.
At 15.
I'm close. No.
I took a whole bottle of lithium.
Like, wow.
Actually ingested it. I should be dead.
What happened after you took it?
Did you become Hulk?
I passed out.
Shivam, talking about a suicide attempt, for Christ's sake. Have a little decorum.
It's a comedy podcast, dude.
Not this week. Yeah. We're going hard this week. One too many stories about my asshole. We're going to change it up.
You should make fun of it a little bit.
Well, I usually do. I just am more self-deprecating about certain subjects. But the curiosity in me goes like, what happens next?
Well, and that's basically like, I puked a bunch. Like, I passed out. I was delirious for like 3 days, like just messed
up. So there was no 911, no paramedics.
I should have been dead. No one found me. I just woke up. I should be dead. Like, that's.
So you're saying these drugs aren't that strong? I can take more.
Yeah, no. I'm some weird anomaly in the fact that I survived.
Wow.
Like, that was the moment I gave up. And I realized, like, probably about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and this is just what I've been dealing with, is looking at that shame that I gave up, and that I could have done so much more for myself. We're talking, I'm 35, this is 15, and 20 years of living a life of, I'll just get by because I gave up, and never even realizing it. And that's the power that a lot of this self-reflecting, the shamanism, these psychedelics have to give, is to go, when did I give up? Where am I not facing myself? What am I not dealing with? What am I not releasing? It's all self-reflection and self-focus are the literal keys of healing. But you can't avoid. You can't excuse. And that's where I get into consciousness perspective coaching, and I use a myriad of things, from the gift to read chakra down to, I think you're even saying that you're leaving the city soon.
I'm trying. I'm leaving the country.
I had no idea yet when I first came in, I was talking, because we only talked about three of your chakras.
Yeah, yeah.
is your route. I said, you're looking at going. You're looking at pulling up.
Oh, ASAP, yeah.
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 And so using those gifts, I can actually get a very real read in you. But I do this in very real time. So as we're talking, I can feel the changes. I can feel you making an excuse of avoidance to not look at a principle where sometimes you won't even notice. And that's where now we start adding psychedelics and the acceleration of the brain, because when we get into psilocybin and mushrooms specifically, this is arguably just a brain vitamin and a brain accelerator. Then you can be completely fine off even minorly psychedelic doses. I purposely didn't let you know till now. I'm on a gram of some pretty decent psilocybin right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I had a drop of LSD about an hour ago, so we're good.
Let's go.
No, you didn't.
Well, I've been microdosing and having really good. I mean, like even Shiva Masvi, people don't realize I'm on it. I just do a drop, but
And microdosing is one thing. 1 gram is where you get minor psychoactive. But those of us that are shaman and really, you know, getting into psychedelics, this is just an active dose. It's just a dose to be more present and available. I don't start going actually psychoactive till about 3.5 grams. And that's when, you know, it's rushes and sensations within the body. It's still not anything exponential till I'm up at about 7 grams because of control and things. Now, could I actually feel into what's going on and access some of that and feel a little bit more of the psilocybin right now? 100%. I'm even starting to work on meditative practice to release extra amounts of minute DMT from my pineal gland. Like, we have all of this. We are interconnected with our bodies. But it's understanding these emotional systems and working through it to understand a conscious perspective to then help the body release that trauma and these blockages so they don't keep coming back and around and we're reoccurring. And it's about breaking the cycle. And the best way to break a cycle is to look at yourself with deep honesty. And, you know, I've more recently pushed some people away because I've been dealing with my shadow and getting into these depths of, why did I give up? Why am I not as proactive as I could be? Even in this getting back to things, I could be so much more proactive.
But you're on a journey now. I mean, it's like, I wouldn't be so hard on yourself. I mean, you can only work with now, meaning like the past doesn't matter.
Well, I'm not being hard on myself, though. I'm being targeted to myself. I'm being acceptant of myself. The fundamentals of acceptance are just to accept, to be in that state of understanding, and to not avoid things that you might have trouble accepting. So the biggest thing is, I want more in my life. Well, I need to look at why I'm not doing more for myself in my life. It's very, very particular and basic. And that's where I've whittled it down right to my childhood, teenage years, where I functionally gave up and started getting by. And that's pretty much what most people are doing.
Sure.
Almost everyone is getting by. They're getting by just looks better than the other on average. But everyone is getting by. Again, we're talking net worth and this and so on and trying to be. And everyone's got this image that they have created, and it's actually built around most people's trauma. And it's so hard to deconstruct this image that's kept you safe while you deconstruct your trauma to then reform that image in a full choice sense, which might look identical. That's the part that gets it so scary is no, you're going to keep 80, 90% of who you are. But you're going to go through the ringer and test it all and really say, you know, I choose 100% to be all these things, not because I'm fulfilling any needs or anything, but because I just enjoy luxury and experience, for example, instead of this luxury and experience makes me feel validated and adds value as a person. It's so tiny. It seems almost insignificant. But when this is actually then applied in a conscious sense to everything moving forward, you have abundance and happiness where you never saw it before. I am absolutely abundant in happiness while going through some of the worst shit of my life.
Sure.
And that's where perspective can take us. And that's what essentially shamanism is really about, is the healing of oneself, body, mind, and spirit. But we very readily forget about the healing of the mind. We can heal the body, we can heal the spirit, but in this physical, it is the governance. The mind is the governance of it all. The mind is what tells our body to heal. And yes, there's some intuitive within the cellular nature, but at the end of the day, we have access to our bodies through this mind, through this consciousness, by expanding the bridge between unconscious and conscious into being, into oneness, into wholeness.
But isn't that what psychoanalysis and good therapy does? Is it pulls the unconscious forward?
Psychoanalysis and good therapy will pull the conscious forward and leave it there. It won't give it its dissections. It won't check it. Where psychology is at, and this is, again, like something I've been studying, is the subversion. Those mental health systems are just going to check you and box you and give you some of this therapy and get you the tools to kind of just get by. But to really go back and say, no, I'm being challenged. There are certain aspects of the ethics that are there that then psychologists take a little further and don't get personal. And that's the difference between psychology and therapy and shamanism, is we're there with you in the emotions, in the moment, all of that, because sometimes that deeper approach is needed. And psychology is just the newer system of it. But again, another system of a control, another system of oppression. They're endlessly
around. I don't know if it's oppression. I mean, 100%. So here's what I will say about therapy, is that I went to 5 therapists, and the first 4 were wasted my time and my money.
Yep.
Then I had one that she was a psychotherapist and psychoanalyst. And I think what kickstarted me, and again, this might just be a product of my constitution, my natural constitution, is that it was a space in which I was not allowed to blame anyone else.
Love it.
For my issues.
So that's your therapist.
So many people, your friends, your family members, they start a conversation. If you listen to it, it's, oh, my boyfriend is treating me like this. Oh, my boss treated me like this. And it's like 2 things. It's like, well, you accepted that. But it's also like, have you communicated to that person how they are treating you? And I would say that alone, getting over that hill, would solve like 40% of people's problems. Mm-hmm. Just understanding that it's a kind of a lonely thought to the, like, I have to only rely on myself and I am responsible for myself and I'm accountable. But it does spark a level of self-love in you, because when you are down in the dumps and you feel lonely and all those things, and then it's like, it's just on you now, suddenly you go, oh, I can take care of myself well and I can rely on myself. And that, to me, takes a really long time, but it's just something that I think getting into your 30s is great. Like, compared to, I'm comparing myself in my 20s, but there are some people in their 20s who
are there. I literally felt it last week, exactly what you said. Literally felt it last week on Sunday.
Like, what you deserve out of life. And it is like that. Yeah. Like, it's like how I was saying about Toronto. Like, when I talk about the tyranny or communism, you know, in jest or whatever, it's just that I don't believe that I need to download an app to enter the country for which my passport allows me free entry.
Agreed.
And there are people who think that that is what they should have to do. Mm-hmm. Not only because they're not questioning, it's because they think that that's appropriate or that's what they think they deserve. And that kind of mentality, which is very prevalent around here, can then spill over into your dating life and your friendships.
Yep.
And you decide how people treat you.
Exactly.
And I think that's one of the things that is making me leave this city, among other economic things, is that I'm feeling that culture start to trickle over, and people are completely isolated on their phones, and I'm already losing them to the system, and their phone is telling them they're not hot enough and they're not rich enough.
Yep.
While at the same time, that stuff's going on, and I feel like I'm losing people. I have had to say to a friend the other day, very seriously, that if you're going to bring your phone around me, I don't want to hang out with you, because you are sending me the message when we're having a conversation and you're checking Twitter that this is not enough and that I am not enough and this moment is not enough. And I don't think there's malice there. I think that's an addiction and a dopamine loss. But that is how I interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's dangerous and it has a deleterious effect on society and the people that are around me. And so I have this weird reflexive response to phone use, and it's very simple. It's because this is enough for me right now. I'm not on my phone. You are sending a message to everyone around you that that they're not enough. They are not enough for you. And there's something on someone online that's better than you, more interesting than you, and they have to go look at them right now. And that is, it's prevalent everywhere, but I definitely am noticing it a ton in this city.
100%. And there's two things there is you're dead on. And if you don't want that, you shouldn't make plans with that friend or anything. But then there's also this back to, because your therapist, amazing. That one, that fifth that you found.
Oracle. Yeah.
Now, then there's also argument because we need to have acceptance for where we're at. And the four of therapists before that let you know that that therapist was the right one.
Well, I also think because she was 70 and was the cream of the crop.
But I'm trying to just point specifically, just using your situation as an example, that there were things that led up to that therapist that made it the right one, that you were in alignment, you were in the right mindset when you finally made it to them. And there is large argument, without jumping into it either way, that each experience beforehand led you to that moment. And that's the appreciation of one's path. So these five ones that allow that consciousness and that perspective would allow to drop the concept waste of money. Because, and that's the lacking, and we need to get rid of as much of that as we actually can and do, and possibly can, is just really look at that. But this person that you're looking at with this cell phone, now, trying to live in this space all the time is near impossible.
Like the digital space, is what you're saying?
The space of your therapist's chambers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The space of, I'm empowered, I'm all of that, so on and so forth.
Correct.
That this person, using that understanding that this person's just on a dopamine hit and it's not anything personal.
Yes, yes.
And
that is
so,
my character flaw. I agree.
And it's not a character flaw.
Well, it is, because I'm impatient and I guess I lack understanding of certain people's situations. I'm just blunt. I just say what it is. But the thing is, in that situation, I'm not wrong. But what I did say is I said I don't think there's malice in it, which is in agreement with you. 100%. I just think it's a person that is conditioned to go like this when a little light pops up. And why it triggers me and it makes me so sad is because I remember that friend 4 years ago and we had a different relationship and it was more layered and it was more questioning. And that person is now losing themselves to a system that is telling them how to think, how to act, how to dress. And I see them just mimicking the system because that system is associated with social currency. So they see influencer A, B, C, D, E
mm-hmm.
with the dream life of the, you know, hawking Tide Pods. So I think the empathy in me goes like, oh, you don't have a self-identity, so you're just sponging off a system now to grab one. And that's where I'm empathetic to him. But that being said, the therapist goes like, I do get to decide what I will tolerate. And mm-hmm. and I need to communicate to that person saying like, you can soften the blow is how I say it. You can say like, I know there's no malice here. You're not, it's nothing about that. But like what I need out of life is this. I need a friend that comes over and has dinner with me and has a like face-to-face conversation. And I feel like I'm losing you to your phone. And if they want to change, they can change.
And in that is you're really onto it, is you can take your power and take your, no one can ever take your power. You can only step out of it. No one can ever take your power. You can only step out of it. That's very, very key, because now that's ownership. Now I'm empowered. If someone's taken my power and I'm trying to get it back, that's still disempowering.
Is that COVID? No. Please give it to me. I need more antibodies.
Yeah. but in that sense, there's also that aspect you mentioned right in the beginning is I don't feel validated by them. And this is where, again, going into that we don't and shouldn't be seeking validation if we're in like that perfect healthy place, is because we are validating ourselves. We are more than enough for ourselves. We have become one. So this is coming from those lessons of enlightenment. And enlightenment is not like a place. It's a range. It's an ebb and flow. You move in and out of it. It's not this consistent thing. And even those yogis that appear that they are in consistent enlightenment, you don't see them inside taking that dip and that drop and self-managing. You just don't see it. They're so well and been doing it for so long. But it's a range. It's just a range of a baseline that when I dip, I'm only dipping into I'm fucking fantastic instead of I am super fantastic, amazing, the wonderful light of the world, blah, 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 blah. 5 minutes later, now I'm done expressing myself because I'm that amazing. So it's a range. And so when we're looking at all of this stuff and those people outside of us and everything that's going on and we're looking to address it, you can simply go, I don't love that you're on the phone all the time and I want to experience you.
Sure.
Like, so that, like, if that's going to be a thing, then that's going to be a thing and we'll see where that goes on, groups and settings. But I don't think we're going to have these one-on-one dinners if it's not a one-on-one dinner.
Yeah, and I don't even want to infantilize you and say, put it in the box at the door.
And instead of going, like, I know there's no malice and I know, and setting it up, just being founded and direct. That's something we don't do anymore in society. Which
well,
is
I do, but yes, good. Most people.
Good. And be even more direct, but still with that care and that say, I don't like this. I want to see it this way. Just plain, because that's the experience I'm here for. Because it's all about experience. Instead of this person's not validating me and all the understanding, when we approach it, that's all the background stuff that we do. We shouldn't bring as much background to the forefront. And we should be formulating our founded statement from all those places. Again, to simply say, I don't like this and the way it happens. Now, if they start asking, what do you not like about it, so on and so forth, definitely get into those details. Because again, we'll be inclined, well, I don't have to explain it to you.
I think they know.
Well, and they will.
If they're not in denial. Do you have any questions? We're going a little long here.
Oh my, I wanted to ask about DMT. And
oh yeah, yeah, let's get into that. Let's get into that.
Jenna, go to Patreon for this.
Oh, I was thinking we just split the episode in two and throw half on Patreon.
Okay.
But yeah. Ask your question. We'll figure out how to split it.
Okay, I've heard so much about DMT. I want to try it one
Hold
day.
Hold on,
although
DMT part in the edit for the clips. Chris, right, we have a clips editor. Two can play that game. Wait.
Ah, baby. Oh, baby, let's
go. That's good.
The only, I don't know if this is a misconception, myth, or whatever. What fascinates me about DMT is I've heard stories where people go and it looks like they're like in an alien ship and they're being like operated on and shit. Like those are kind of the dreams. Is this something that because people think this is going to happen, that's why it happens? Like all of it is in your mind? Or does stuff really like you experience new things that you didn't even know existed?
Very, very arguably, I like where you're going is like, and that's 100% with any psychedelic, what's in your mind is going to be prevalent within your journey. As far as my DMT, very little hallucination, very little. And I believe that's partly, again, I said I don't really visualize much. I'm repairing that with psilocybin over time, which is interesting. But with the DMT specifically, all I got was I laid back after dosing. So I did mine with a Mayan shaman in Tulum in the jungles, one-on-one. He's been studying since he was 13. He's now 38. So you can take an idea of all the journey. Like this is the real deal. It was the coolest thing I've ever done.
How much, not to be uncouth, but how much does that cost?
So with this one specifically.
Like I mean, saying not to be uncouth. What am I, the etiquette expert? And most weeks I talk about like sucking dick on this show. Sorry. How much did it cost, Matthew?
It was only $150.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
He is incredibly inexpensive. He does not believe in, he believes in his craft. He does not believe in over energetic exchange. If you feel that you have to give him more afterwards, so on and so forth. And that was my first round. My second round was complete gift energetic exchange because he put me down patient and brought me back up shaman. So it became a little different. I went back for some cambo. So basically, I went in, I met him first, we started talking, he just talks about his girlfriend and all, he talks about everything to get a sense of you and your responses, and that's how we work sometimes, is we will put ourselves out to see how you respond to that, to get an understanding of you. And I told him about my work with the mushrooms, he took me right from Cambo, which is a detoxification, not so psychedelic, but more the secretions of the Cambo frog on the skin. He said, no, you're going right to Bufo. I want to give you 5-MeO-DMT. And he gave me a 2.5-time dose. So a full good macro dose, a good hero's dose of this DMT is a 0.1 of Bufo. He gave me roughly a 0.25. So 2.5 times of the standard.
When dose. You say he gave you, what is the form?
So the form is actually ironically like a crack pipe. So the idea is to vaporize the secretions of the Bufo alvarius toad's throat. And you actually vaporize these into a vapor.
It's so funny how they find these things. Lit a couple toad throats on fire. And like, wow.
I want to meet the guy who's like, let's try smoking this shit.
Yeah. Try the bull balls first.
He was the one everyone wanted to hang out with, always, guaranteed.
Yeah.
He's going to go Shiba. Lick a tree or a frog and just watch.
He's a little bi curious with animals, too. He would go for the male animal, too.
Oh, man. But he basically vaporizes and gives you like a light little micro to begin with to let it set into your system. And then the big dose, and he gets you to inhale and inhale and inhale and inhale and inhale. And
is
inhale.
Your heart racing at this point because you don't know what's coming?
No, because
I would be like, oh no.
Again, I'm really deep in my practice already at this point with mushrooms. Sure. So I understand the lessons of acceptance.
I know, but to me, DMT is the next echelon, right? Like
I just went. So what? I'm going to go there.
Well, that's what I say about psychedelics. I say the people that need them the most are least likely to do them.
That's the crazy part. And, well, that's also perpetuated. But when he gave me that dose, it was absolutely incredible. I just kind of breathe. He tells you to hold it in, and you hold it, and you hold it, and now breathe out. And he's like, breathe out your essence. Just breathe out. And that's it. Like, I'm backing away from the mic.
Oh, yeah, they know.
Is I lay back, and he laid me back, and the trees just started, you know, like something out of like a 90s movie where they just, that photo work, and they blend the trees, identical. Close my eyes, and that was it. Like, it just, I saw the reflections of the ocean on the light in the bottom of the ocean or the bottom of a pool. And then it was like I was home.
That's it.
It was, and I had I can only quantify it as about 80 years of emotions and feeling and consciousness actually rushed through me. I went through all the planes, went right back to source, right to connectivity. There's a lot of talk of what you will call star seeds. I definitely have looked into this in myself. There's a lot of energetic ties, and this is just, you know, soul origins, things like that. But I feel like I went home to Andromeda, another galactic planet, all this stuff. I don't care to research a lot of this stuff because it's kind of cool and great. You know, it's just my understanding why I'm trying to help humanity and really deeply going at all these things. But I came back in 3.5 minutes. A standard DMT trip is about 10. So I hyper-processed the shit at the same time, and I basically came back and just sat up. Now, under this time, it was not a standard Bufo. I didn't move a muscle. Most people thrash, make noises, all of that. I did not move a muscle. And came back up, looked at the shaman, went, I'm good. I'm slipping. Bring me back. Like, because in a moment, I remember, you can stay. You can stay. And I'm like,
what do you mean stay in the trip?
In the trip.
I'm not this deep.
Like, yeah, I could have. And it's rarely happened, but it does happen, is on extreme odd occasion, someone who's ready for deep enlightenment will let go under trip. Now, this is not something people should be scared of or anything like that. These are very rare stories that you hear about in shaman circles, but it has happened maybe a dozen times in the existence of psychedelics.
Now, when you say let go, does that mean die?
Yeah.
Wow.
What about go, like,
but
insane?
That's what we're after, is we're after some sort of death, if you will.
Of your old self?
Of your old self, and so on. Now, this is where I talked to the shaman about this. He's like, holy, yeah, like, you went to the heavens. Like, he verifies it. He doesn't see this very often. If like, couple of times he's seen someone really just go down and then come back up, so deep and present within the moment. And it was a choice. I remember very literally a choice to come back. And upon making that choice is when I came back through. And the integration of all of that is still unfolding in front of me. It was so, so much. But arising to basically go, shit, I've got it. I've got the tools. I've got the access. I've got all of this. I didn't learn anything. All I got was some simple validation, some simple love, extra deeper love for myself, and the courage to start deconstructing myself fully and finish what I started in my healing path and journey. And that's where he basically afterwards is like, no, you're a psychonaut, like apparently one of the strongest minds he's ever seen, to actually induce and take psychedelics. And that's where shaman comes into, is some of us just have an adaptability for acceptance. There are two governing principles of psychedelics that I talk to them and they're like, oh, that's the advanced stuff. I'm like, no, this is the basics and where you start from. And if you can't grasp this, take time to grasp this. I didn't at first when it was taught to me by someone who has access to 100% pure LSD and won't give it to just anybody. But I was taught acceptance is paramount. The only control that you have is to understand you don't have control. Now, you can actually blow that down even more into sensory perceptions, feelings, emotions. You can really start to understand that concept. And there comes this form of visceral acceptance. And then the other one is intention is key. Intention is the be all and end all. So much so that people mess this up. People mess up intention.
So you mean they go into a trip with no intention?
No, with too much intention.
Oh, with too much intention.
So the idea is, because people will talk about, if you take intention being key to such a level, it will dismantle your environment matters. Because now it's an experience and acceptance. On the housing strike, I actually did a half quarter one night, camping in the middle of University Avenue, and at 2:30 in the morning, all of a sudden, cop cars are going, fire trucks are going, there's cars, there's homeless screaming, helicopters are going over. Like, you want to talk sensory overload? Oh my gosh. This was like something out of the LSD trials. And all I went, oh, wow, that's a lot. That's cool. Wow, that's a crazy sensation. I'm going to go sit in my tent. It just, such visceral acceptance for every feeling and every emotion that's coming through. And your intent to not have anything matter and derail, because if your intent is acceptance, if your intent is the only control you have is to understand you don't have control, all of a sudden that starts cycling into itself and you have, now you are exploring the psychedelics, they're not exploring you. Mm. You're actually directing where your journey and your consciousness is going and how it's experiencing everything. The rushes under that much DMT, it took every little bit of training and acceptance to go through the initial rush. As soon as I accepted that initial rush, boom.
So if you were someone like me who is, I would say I've done acid maybe 5 times. When would you know that you were ready to try, this is a very subjective question, but yeah, like ready to try DMT, meaning like, I could probably get up to 200 UGs acid trip, which is pretty significant. You don't want to like give your blessing, but it's like, I have heard friends that have done DMT and them telling me about their DMT experience made me not want to do it. Versus mm-hmm. I've had friends that do acid and tell me how great it was. I've never personally had a bad acid trip. But my friend did DMT and she said that she smoked it and then it was like she just disappeared out of the room and then she was in like Egyptian times in like some sort of a thing and people were walking around like this and she was having conversations. She said it lasted like 20 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little much for me. Like being out of the room,
I
don't know.
It takes you completely out of your body.
Yeah.
And this is where we still don't know. Like, do I go somewhere or am I just going into a conscious understanding? Like there's still some looking. I personally believe we can travel either out or in. And I think a lot of the hallucination journeys, like, there's no science, this is just my own brain coming up with things, but I think a lot of the hallucinations is us just, again, playing out things. It's similar to a dream. And we're playing out a lot of that metaphor that's going on. I've only spoken to a few that go under trip that don't have any hallucination, but they're usually branching and pushing into massive consciousness. And so what I would say is you will know you're ready when you stop having to ask, will I know when I'm ready?
Yes, to a person I just met.
No, just period. to anyone, to yourself, to anything. That is actually the point. So often, like, I don't plan journey in the same sense that most people would. It finds me. I know I'm getting close when I start thinking about it. And then there gets to a point where I'm like, I'm just setting up and I can't avoid. That was kind of my first pull into mushrooms. My first kind of go in to do this DMT, it was, you know, I had to reschedule on them on one point because I wasn't really ready in that acceptance. I was hesitant. And it's just this, yes, you will know. That might never come. But know that your experience of DMT will be your experience. Everyone's is definitely different. I would say you are more inclined to be completely fine with this stuff with the way that you're talking about acceptance and the way that you go through acid. So I would not discourage you. I would just caution you to make sure that it's a visceral yes in all of your energetics. And don't worry about what other people went through because, again, that's now we're setting intention.
Sure. Because it's like when people tell me about their bad acid trips and I've never had a bad one.
That one's interesting is that I will say there's no such thing as a bad trip, only a heavy trip unaccepted. Because you said when, you know, this one and you went
through
anger.
Anger. Yeah, then I could flip it
and
somehow.
It was so beautiful when you're like, it wasn't a bad trip, it was just heavy. That's what I'm noting at, is because you had acceptance.
Right.
If there is a missing form of acceptance, acceptance hasn't been found prior to going into journey, then you are most likely going to have a bad trip. I've had some incredibly heavy trips that have left me on the ground sniveling with snot bubbles and all like disgusting cries. Like just bad. But in that release was such joy and such incredible things. I wrote my very first poem. So again, it wasn't bad. It was heavy. It was deep. It was expansive. And what we're doing is we're comparing taking some drugs and having some fun to inner work. You can't.
Sure. I used to treat drugs. Well, other drugs don't function the same way, but I used to treat like mushrooms and my first couple acid trips as just like, bull. That's how I would describe it. And now when people ask me why I do solo acid trips, which I've done two of in the past month, it's because I truly treat it as medicine.
Yes.
I do believe it's very helpful, and people can't believe that because of the social conditioning, and they think I'm throwing my life away.
Thank you for putting that out there, and really just, I have to commend your courage to put yourself open like this, and to say, no, it is medication. I am getting healing from this, because this is the hardest thing, like, men of any orientation, of any walk of life in this world, is being strong towards healing, being that I am not the perfect, I am not everything, no matter which walk of life. It's put into us all that we've got to be everything. But the true strength of a man is, you know, to go in and cry when it makes sense, to actually take that moment and approach your healing to say, you know, I am hurting and I will be stronger for it. And that's more what we have to bring, and these psychedelics actually have the potential to give. And like when we get into the microdose terms, we're talking curing medication-resistant depression. Well, that's because most depression is perceptionary. Most anxiety is perceptionary. These are natural human functions that are being demonized, and people are brought into the system and encouraged to strive for zero anxiety, zero depression. That's not possible. I mean, have zero anxiety when all of a sudden a car crash happens right next to you.
Or heavy opiates.
Right.
That's why when I was on Dilaudid in the hospital, I was like, oh, I could throw my life away for this.
Yep.
I had zero anxiety. Like, it was incredible.
It is. My first real push into opiates was actually a set of cluster migraines, and they couldn't get them to go away. It was only get them to come down, and it ended with I already was given just a dose of morphine, and then they came and gave me, I think, 2 1-milligram pushes. That's an IV push.
Oh, I felt it, baby.
Oh, man. 2 back to back within 5 minutes of each other.
I felt like I was coming. Yeah. Like, actually, like, I wanted to go down to, like, feel my dick, and I was like, not a lot, but I was like, I felt like I was dripping out. I mean, it was, it's very close to heroin. Like, I was basically in this hospital room. I was in there for 5 days. They were giving it to me every 4 hours.
Whoa.
And by the third day, it was all I cared about. Like, it was terrifying.
And
oh my god!
And it really
but
like
it was
that's
great.
Oh, that
it
rush,
was great.
That rush of the second one, it felt like I was coming out of every orifice, every pore of my body.
Oh, you just like you melt, and you're just like oh. And the other thing is like nothing can faze you.
Oh yeah, my god.
Like that's why how people throw their lives away because like someone could have walked into that room and be like, your dog just got hit by a car, and obviously I would be sad, but it offers such a barrier to that, to rationality and presence, let's say, that I was like. I would just be like, oh, that sucks. Yep. And you can see why people, they get in a drug hole and they throw it all away, like, on the streets.
And half the prescriptions that they put you on to deal with depression will also bring you there.
Oh, my God.
I remember when I was 15, my mom begging me to leave, stop playing Command and Conquer at the computer. And I remember looking down at her emotionless going, no. It's the only time in my life. And that was where I started waking up to the medication. And when, like, I came through a couple of days later, like these are drug induced psychosis moments of complete lack of empathy
and numbness. Like, I mean, I took Ciprolex like probably like 8 years ago for anxiety. Was it Ciprolex? I don't remember. And I was flat. I felt nothing. Yep. I wasn't sad, but I wasn't happy. And one day I was jogging by the water, and there was a moment that scared the shit out of me. While I would never touch those drugs again, is for about 5 seconds I didn't remember where I was.
There you go.
Oh my god!
Just boom. It was, like, gone. I was, like, where the fuck am I? Like, where? What is this place? And then it snapped back in, and I was, like,
scary.
Yeah. I mean, it's
really
just...
scary.
I mean, I don't think they're... I think these drugs are good to get people out of holes. Like, definitely. There's some people that, like... I mean, I would prefer the stuff we've talked about, but for the most part, you know, it's not as accessible to people. I think there's people who go through, you know, their mom dies and they, you know, just horrible things happen to them, and they have to have a period where they need the drug as a crutch to get them out of the hole. But I don't think it's a long-term
thing.
That's
also because society's not in a place where we can have problems and damage.
Everyone drinks. I mean, now that I don't drink, I notice that people need it.
If you stop working for a week, you're done. There's no, we're overworked. That's the reality.
That's why you wait for Friday to get drunk.
That's it. And so when I say releasing some of this income a little bit more from employers, it fixes a lot of problems.
Yeah. It also gives people the intrinsic motivation because they're part of something, which is nice.
So when we get down to these people and when we get down to approaching or healing our problems, all this stuff.
Just has to be a good closer, Matt. You know that, right?
Yeah.
But you need this is you have to tie it all together at this big moment. We're going to clip on YouTube.
All right. We're going to tie it together with the one moment. So
what have we learned today?
In the end, what we've learned is that we have all the substance. We have everything we need. We come to this world complete as one. And as we grow up, we become disconnected from that, from ourselves, from all this influence and this few over the many. And that life now is about that journey back to oneself. And there are many ways that we can do this, but at the end of the day, our perspectives and our consciousness, expanding that and being willing to see things from other perspectives and incorporate some of this, just openness and acceptance, applying what I'm going to be releasing as the fundamentals of acceptance, which its ground fundamental is to accept acceptance. It's almost so roundabout that it becomes extremely complicated to simplify. And that's essentially how we can work this world. The real substance is actually moving from that simplification to overcomplication to resimplify that we have around about understanding. It's not about one perspective or dualities anymore, but a multality of multiple perspectives, of multiple possibility to see that this world is amazing, that we all are beautiful, that none of us is more or less than any one other, that the true lessons of ego integration could literally save the planet if we stop turning around and going, but people aren't like that. Because the second we go, but people aren't like that,
we excuse it.
That's it. And yeah, then we make sure to be part of the people that aren't like that.
Smart. Profundity. Put your information in the show notes. Where can people come see you? I know you on your Instagram, you're in Yorkville, which is such a strange, I mean, those people need help. But
surprised.
How many of them are on pills when they come to see you?
Yeah, a few are usually drunk.
Yeah, a couple of housewives with the Chardonnay.
Oh my
yeah.
gosh. Usually, yeah, I'll be popping up around the city. I've got my Instagram going now is the Psilocybin Shaman. So, Soul instead of the CY.
We'll put it in the in the show.
But
he will. Yes.
Basically, you can find me anywhere around Toronto. What I do is very one-on-one, and I go to wherever you need to be. So, whether I'm practicing out of my place, coming to your home, meeting in a park, I can be mostly found online, and I'm on hand to the community anytime needed.
Birthday gift for Shivam? What's the price range?
What's the price range? So just straight counseling is about $50 an hour. If I'm working energetic chakras and using some of that reading, I just bump it up to about $75 an hour. I do full prana restoration and chakra realignment. So this is actually an old practice of channeling life force flow back into you using myself. It's a very exhausting process. So I do that at about $150 per hour. And full guided journeys, which is an elapsed 8-hour process from actually setting the intention, doing the readings, doing the counseling, actually inducing the journey, and then...
When you say inducing, means like tripping.
Actually okay. putting and okay. supplying the medicine, and then the follow-up and the integration afterwards. So it's about a 6 to 8 hour process, and I charge about $600 for that.
Wow. That was the one I was thinking of. Okay.
Like next birthday, Jordan.
Could be like two birthdays maybe together in one. I don't even know. No, he wants to go. We were supposed to go to the CN Tower, which is my living nightmare, because you know the monstrosity of hell that is right there. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This has been another week of Unmentionable Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.